Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Finn gets his memories back on B&B, Abigail's in Boot Hill on Days, Sasha breaks down on GH, and Victoria saves the day, question mark, on Y&R? Stay tuned. Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Melody Akles, welcome, Mel.
Hey, hey.
Well, I'm going to save Abigail's funeral for a little bit later. First, gonna dive into The Bold and the Beautiful. Mel, what did you think of Finn, his memory, Sheila, and everything that took place on that front on B&B this last week?
Now, y'all know I love me some Sheila Carter. So, we're finally getting more into the Sheila that we know, you know, but it's a little different because I kept thinking the entire time as, you know, Finn was flatlining and then coming back and Mike was talking to Sheila, which I thought was hysterical, that I was like, wait a minute, y'all mean to tell me that Sheila Carter done forgot she a nurse? She forgot all her nursing skills?
Seriously.
That was one of the things that made that character even scarier, because she had all of this medical knowledge and was an actual nurse. She could kill your ass and bring you back. But now, you mean to tell me she forgot everything? I'm calling BS, Bold and the Beautiful, because no, that's not gonna work for me. But I mean, I understand we have to ramp up the drama and make things like that. But she managed to figure out a way to bring him back. So I guess that's fine. I did enjoy the conversation between Sheila and Mike, though, where she was, you know, explaining herself away of, well, you know, it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill Lee. And he was like, those happen a lot around you, Sheila. And she just looks at him. She shot him in them eyes like, excuse me? And he was like, oh, my bad. I didn't. You know, I need to remember accidents happen around you. I didn't say nothing. I'm going to behave myself. So I'm hoping we kind of get out of this room because I'm tired of looking at it. But I just want, give me more of Sheila that I know and let her remember that she a nurse. Thank you.
Josh, what did you think?
Ditto to everything that Melody said. My favorite part of it, though, was when Finn starts to awaken and Sheila said, oh, my gosh, thank God. I mean, thank me that you're awake. I lost my shit. I started cackling in the middle of my living room because Sheila's like, yeah, she's like, I did it. I saved him. It's fine. And Finn wakes up with that look like, what the hell's going on? But the other part of it that I really did like was, Melody, what you were saying was that look that Sheila shot Mike, where Mike was like, oh shit, I'm sorry. It's been a minute. I forgot. That it was straight up good. And like, Sheila has been back on screen now for 6-9 months. And this last few weeks, the first time that I feel like we've really seen Sheila. Mm-hmm. Like, this is Sheila. Sheila and the I don't know if either of y'all or the listeners have seen the promo for this week, but we got real Sheila back. Like Kathy Bates in Misery Sheila back in the promo for this week.
So wait, is that like the real Greenlee? Is that what you're saying?
Kind of like the real Greenlee. Don't be hitting on Sabine Singh like that. You know, poor Sabine Singh. But Kat, but I listened to one of the things I listened to when we were doing the Emmys podcast was the interviews Michael Fairman did with all of the nominees and with Kimberlyn Brown. She talked about how this character was patterned after Kathy Bates in Misery. And what they're doing this next or this week is very Kathy Bates in Misery with Sheila turning on Finn. And when she figures out that he's not so cool with him being the mama, whether with her being the mama and her trying to keep him there. So I'm very, very excited by what comes next.
Question. Have I missed it, or has this Sheila recognized Daisy and company?
Mm-mm, not no. A single mention of mm-mm. Another child.
No, nope. Okay. Because Finn is her only baby. Oh, I'm like, Sheila got 2, 3, 4 kids at this point, so I don't. It's fine. Yeah, check reality at the couch.
Yep.
Josh, what are you thinking of Quinn and Carter this past week?
Quinn and Carter can be hitting the sheets on my screen all the time. Now,
preach.
I have to forget about Eric pulling Mandingo on Carter and pulling him back to service Quinn 6 months ago. If I can just put that out of my mind, because that was so horrific. But Quinn and Carter as a couple on my screen, we're not going to talk about that wedding because that didn't happen. That was foolishness. But then I'm on my screen being all sexual and hot. Hell yeah. Five days a week, at least one of the sections of the show, I'm happy with it. Them all naked and being all sexy and hot and wonderful. Absolutely. Yes. Wonderful.
Mel, how about for you?
It's two for two. Those two are sexy. Woo! Jesus. They burned up my screen, and y'all know I got feelings about Lawrence A. Victor for a long time. So it's an excuse for him to be shirtless and in them little bitty shorts all the time. Yes. Ooh. Yes. Put it on my screen. I will watch it all day. Yes.
You just stand there in the corner. I don't care.
Yeah. Whew, yes. But they are sexy. They got it. I love it. But I'm sorry. I'm going to have to talk about this wedding because I got to do it. Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. So first of all, the MVP of this wedding is Rena Sofa because, baby, she made them lines work. Okay.
She did. It's true.
She made them work. I'm going to give it to her. And it reminded me of Singing in the Rain. Because in that movie, Gene Kelly's character, you know, he's playing a silent actor, silent film actor in the movie. And in one part, he's like, well, can I just do what I always do? I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. You know, and it comes off ridiculous. And it kind of reminded me of what they had Rita say to Carter, but what they had Quinn say to Carter, but she did it great. Like, she made it believable. She said it the same thing four different ways, and it was fabulous. But on the flip side of that, no, Bold and the Beautiful. You mean to tell me y'all got all these black people at this wedding, and ain't nobody turned this wedding out?
No. Not one.
It is not. No. You kidding me? She done showed up after riding a bicycle down the beach, broke up the whole wedding, and not one piece of furniture, a piece of china, not one cake went flying nowhere. That wouldn't have happened. That's completely no.
Maybe they've been sanctified.
Hell no. Oh,
or sanitized.
Sanctified? No.
They got the Holy Ghost.
Way. No, there's no way that would have happened.
Carter's head.
Okay. Her mama didn't even say nothing. Her mama didn't get up or call him up. You know what? None of that happened. They just sat there and took it. I was like, my mama and I would have turned that whole place out. We'd have flipped over everything. Oh, the next day.
They only did it for like 5 minutes. Like, Carter went in to apologize, and he was done by the commercial break.
And the most disappointing slap. Like, what was that? We could have saved that if we was going to do that.
It was nothing. And then to add all of it, to make it all worse, Zenday comes in and Paris is like, okay, I'll just go with you.
Yep. No, ugh. No backlash. No, oh, he broke my heart. I'm going to get you back. You got to pay.
She was partying with the Foresters the next day.
Yep. None of that. I'm like, we wasted so much potential story. There could have been so much here of maybe her plotting revenge or anything. Nope, she's fine. She's good. She at Brooks Barbecue 2 days later.
Hanging out with Donna and Eric. And
which is so gross. Family. Like, I don't. There's a lot missing here. Like, we skipped over too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 18 wheelers rolled through the holes.
Speaking of skipping shit. Let's talk about The Young and the Restless.
Please, let's do.
Victoria somehow had a giant master plan, pulled it off flawlessly by duping her family and Ashland, and now has saved the day, reclaimed her throne at Newman, basically kicked Adam to the side, and it was all part of her master plan. Fuck that. She's not that smart.
In flashbacks.
Mel, what did you think?
That, I see where we were trying to go. I see where we're trying to do it. You know, oh, look, Victoria is not dumb. We promise. We promise that she's still smart. And I'm like, is she, though? Is she?
But let's do it real quick so y'all don't think about it too
right.
much.
Exactly. That was the thing. It was like, yeah. This change of her intelligence came completely out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Mm-hmm. This Victoria has never been written like Heather Tom's Victoria.
True.
Ever. And all of a sudden, it's like she's Heather Tom's Victoria for 1 week only. It's like a one-time special event.
One day.
Well, 1 week of soap episodes minutes. Is what I'm talking about. Like, yes, one soap day, but like 1 week for us, the viewers, all of a sudden she's this brilliant heir to Victor that she has not been since Heather Tom was in the role because the writing changed when Heather Tom left.
And Robert Newman is suddenly Maurice Bernard throwing barware across the room in his hotel.
Well, and for the CBS soaps and General Hospital, my thought watching all of this is the summer of my discontent, because there's so much stuff on these shows that I'm like, come on, you could do so much better. So much better. And you don't, okay, I can't say they don't, but it feels like they don't try sometimes. And whatever this shit was with Victoria this last week certainly felt like there was no trying. That we're going to just whitewash everything that's happened. The fact that she's an idiot and has been the victim of Ashlyn for however long and was supposedly the person who had to be rescued. Victoria, if that's the case, then Victoria deserves an Oscar.
And it all but undid, for me, what was the best part of all of it, which was before the whole Victoria is going to save the day bullshit through flashbacks. The best part of it to me was when Adam and Nikki were co-CEOs, because Adam and Nikki have slowly started having an interesting relationship to me where they're not, because he stood up for Victoria when she went to marry Ashlyn. Every time the world starts to come crashing down on Adam, she doesn't quite go in on him quite as hard. And right before Victoria came back and saved the day, them together as co-CEOs was kind of interesting to me because they are two characters that aren't often on screen together. And I liked that. And then they just completely undid it by having Victoria come in and save the day. And then they brought Nicholas's dull ass, who's beautiful but dull, into that room where he was the voice of reason, oddly, and is coming back to Newman. What?
Well,
what?
And then you have Sharon. Like, I love Sharon and Nick. Sharon knows Nick's history with returning to Newman, so if he's going to be returning to Newman, it makes sense that he'd be having a conversation with her. But I'm like, Sharon and Nick sort of came out of the blue. I mean,
well, Sharon hadn't been on in weeks.
Right. Mel, what did you think of Victoria's triumphant return to Genoa City as the master manipulator of everyone?
I was really just bleh about it because I'm like we've been saying, this is not how this character has been written in a very long time. So now for her to go back and be like, oh, I had this plan all along and I'm making sure that you don't screw over my family, Ashton. Meh, meh, meh. I was like, it doesn't come across the same way as it would if there was a different actress in the role. So it wasn't giving for me. And then I wasn't super fond of Victoria calling the airport and being like, send the jet. How do you still have access to this jet after you'd have walked out of everything? Because the Victor Newman I know would have cut your ass off so fast. Mm-hmm. So I was like, no, I don't like any of this. But I did think it was funny that they had Robert Newman shave his goatee. So now he can be the villain, but he can't be mustache twirling because he doesn't have one. So I was like, all right, that's where we're going. Sure, let's do that. Nick going back to Newman was something I didn't necessarily see coming because that just really has not been what he wanted to do ever, really, because he going back to the origins of that character, he didn't want nothing to do with Newman Enterprises. Yes, he did it for some years, but he was always like, I'd rather do something.
Well, and supposedly now he's doing it for Victoria, but we, as this story's played out, what we've seen is Victor's still the one sitting in the big chair, regardless of what Victoria or Adam does.
Victor will always be the one in the chair.
But that's the thing. I don't see how Nick doesn't see that and know that he's going just back into old patterns. I mean, the only difference is that this time he's got $500 million that he's invested in another company and has given some to a bunch of it to charity and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That because those are the
poor Skid Row apartments. He's just leaving those behind.
All those storylines that took place after the three children sued him and each got $500 million. I mean... Mm-hmm.
And we've just forgotten that Nicholas gave his $500 million away.
Right. Yep. That's what I was thinking. Like, originally it was a business, and now he's giving it away. But the thing is like, I don't see... The Young and the Restless corporate storylines have been so bad for so long, I don't see why we're beefing up Newman Enterprises again. There's no Newman versus Chabot. There's no...
There are no cosmetics on this show anymore.
And it's not like it's a media company. It's not like Victoria is going to go after Billy's company. I mean...
Oh, don't even bring him up.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I'm like, this show has no corporate storylines, mm-hmm. which is one of the bread and butters of the show. It has no good corporate storylines, and yet we're now staffing up at Newman. It makes no sense.
Because they're only talking about the companies as a whole. They're not actually being companies that sell products, because that's why it worked back in the day. Remember, we used to have Safra, we used to have Tuvia, we used to have Glow by Chabot. Mm-hmm. There was always some kind of product one company was putting out to go against the other one. They had different campaigns to promote these products, and you wanted to see which one was going to win, which one was going to succeed. Hell, we used to see Ashley Abbott in the lab making the damn products.
And it's like on The Bold and the Beautiful, when there used to be two rival fashion houses and you had the catwalk offs. I mean, there's none of that on The Young and the Restless. And so, how do I put this?
Say it. Rant about it. Say it.
The difference between The Young and the Restless and General Hospital, when it came to corporate storylines involving, say, the Quartermains versus the Newmans or the Abbotts. On The Young and the Restless, as Melody pointed out, there were actual products. On General Hospital, the only time a product comes up at ELQ is when the condom breaks. But the control for who's in charge of ELQ is just something that happens between the family members and then the occasional outsiders who the family is trying to keep out. And that works for the Quartermains, because the ELQ, as we know it, has been, for a very long time, primarily done out of the Quartermain mansion. Then you have The Young and the Restless, where both Chabot and Newman Enterprises still have corporate offices, very nice corporate offices. Hell, the corporate offices on The Young and the Restless would swamp what we see on Days of Our Lives. And we're getting the same like figurehead storylines on The Young and the Restless that we get with the Quartermains. And the problem is that the Newmans and the Abbotts are nowhere near as much fun as the Quartermain squabbling, because the Abbotts don't really squabble unless it's Jack versus Ashley, or sometimes Jack versus Billy, but not really Jack versus Billy, because they all sort of come around and align with each other. And on the Newman side, it's not really that much fun either, because Nick is a wet rag when it comes to corporate storylines. Victoria can't ever do anything that will outsmart anyone except for this past week, because Victor's always going to do it. And then you have Adam being petty.
I know that it doesn't work with the way the character's written right now, but this is where Adam should go to Abby. And Abby should hate Victoria, hate her. Mm-hmm. Adam and Abby should be teaming up and taking Victoria down. Because poor Abby is the last to know anything. Adam, there's no reason that Abby should like Victoria at all. I just don't get it.
The side Newmans versus the main Newmans.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
There is more intrigue on General Hospital using the Quartermain ELQ control, with having Lucy Coe being the person who owns, what is it, 3-5%, whatever it is, it's the swing vote. There's more interest in actual corporate intrigue out of the Quartermain living room than there is on The Young and the Restless in either of the corporate boardrooms for Jabot or Newman Enterprises.
And that's sad because that's not even interesting.
Right. Mel, what did you think of Phyllis and Diane over the holiday break?
Oh, yes. Lord, Phyllis versus Diane, round 753. You know, Phyllis coming back to town in some giant ridiculous hat. A, who you hide from, girl? Who don't see you? Like, what? I do like that Diane is just eating Phyllis's lunch. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything else. She's telling her
supper,
everything
sunch.
To get in her head, you know. Oh, well, you know, you just trying to do this for Jack. And, you know, he's been hanging around me more often. It just burns her up every time. And I'm
every
like,
time.
Well, you know, that's a Phyllis pattern, though. You're going to press her buttons and she's going to take the bait every time. So, but I kind of do want to see her. Look, if Jack said he don't want you no more, then move on. Like, I'm a Phyllis and Jack fan from way back, but it's only so much. I'm like, all right, that's enough. Come on now. Like, we gotta move on. Pick up and move on, Phyllis. I know that's something you don't do often is move on. But come on, girl. You can do this. You grown now. We grown. So,
the thing about Phyllis this last week, Josh, was desperate Phyllis is sort of pathetic Phyllis if it's not written right. And I got a lot of pathetic Phyllis this week, and I don't like pathetic Phyllis.
Yeah, I agree with you. The thing, I mean, Susan Walters is saving the show. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it out there. When she's on my screen, I am just in heaven. But it's not a fair fight. They're writing Phyllis is so pathetic. It's not a fight. Susan Walters is like, she's the puppet master. And Phyllis is just falling for everything that she does. So it's entertaining because I think Susan Walters kills it. And I'm enjoying the hell out of her riling Phyllis up and then walking away just as Jack walks up to see Phyllis screaming at her. That's fun. But it's not a fight.
See,
it's kind of sad.
If I was Adam, I'd be going to Diane. Because Adam and Diane as a dastardly duo in Genoa City, forget Ashlyn. Fuck him. Ship him off. Adam and Diane, that's some fun.
I agree with you. I think Adam and Diane could be fun. Now, I like seeing Robert Newman on my screen.
Listen, that is me saying that about Ashlyn has nothing to do with Robert Newman, who
I
adore.
I know that.
But
I know that.
We are spending an inordinate amount of time on a character that's been on the show for less than 3 years, and he is consuming an immense amount of creativity to
be
able to keep
Phyllis,
him there.
We've seen Phyllis and Diane, and Phyllis is not, for whatever reason, they're writing Phyllis in the sort of pitiful, sad way. That hat, oh, Mel. What is intriguing about you saying Adam and Diane is I think what would be more intriguing with the way that the characters are written is Sally and Diane. If Adam and Diane were partnering up, Sally would get insecure, or Sally would be like, what the hell is going on? And Sally, they're writing Sally like old school Phyllis.
Yep.
See, but can you imagine a soap opera magazine that had Diane on one arm of Adam and Sally on the other, and that's the triangle?
It's Soap Opera Weekly. I can see it right now.
Right, exactly. Me too. Mel, I know that you don't watch the Mothership Days of Our Lives, but are you going to be tuning in for Beyond Salem, which premiered this week?
So I did watch a couple of episodes of the first season, so I was kind of interested in that. But I do at least want to see the first episode of season 2 of Beyond Salem, because I know they're bringing it back. Holding out for a hero, y'all.
Now,
go in hope, because I've heard Jamie talk about it a million times. So I definitely want to see, all right, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. What's going on? I've been reading about a lot of things. I got a chance to interview Ron Colavardi on the red carpet at the Emmys.
Ooh.
He was telling me lots of good things about what's coming up. You know, Loretta Devine's character.
I was going to say, that's
Devine.
What I'm looking forward to on Beyond Salem is Loretta Devine.
Steve Burton is back as his original OG soap character. So there's a lot of things, a lot of different factors here that I'm like, I might check out. And of course, you know, they got Bo back, Peter Ruckel. So I'm like, all right.
So
I'm about to give you a shot.
Normally we record the episodes on the weekend, and this week we're actually recording on a Monday evening. So the first episode's already out. Josh has a recap that's about ready to go live. Josh, what did you think of the first episode?
Oh, it was Peter Ruckel. I mean, come on now. And Christian Alfonso. I mean, without giving away too much, you get to see both Christian Alfonso and Peter Ruckel in the first 5 to 10 minutes of the episode. You can see Burton's in the first 30 seconds of the episode. And it immediately feels like old school days. I mean, with a new school twist. I mean, for folks that watch The Mothership, you know that Bo is in heaven. So he showed up on the Mothership on NBC a few weeks ago, and he is still in heaven on Beyond Salem, but he's watching what goes on. And just Mel, just to give you, and you probably learned this from Ron, but the Loretta Devine's character is Angela, and she's like she's like the one who's overseeing him in heaven, and she like is correcting him. Like, he keeps cursing and she smacks him and he keeps doing things wrong and she keeps telling him what it's funny. It's very comedic.
She's Angel Manager.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
Her name is Angela.
But you know the difference between old school and new school days. If you saw the preview photos that I think it was Entertainment Weekly put out with John Black at the gay bar.
Oh yeah.
Drake Hogeson is here to tell you that Carson Boatman is not the only one who has great guns still.
Ooh, silver
because
Fox,
he was doing some flexing.
He did some flexing. He's all up in the pride party. He's serving the drinks. He's dancing. He's got all these folks around. He's playing with everything. And I'm just going to use one. I'm just going to say one line. There was one line that was so good. Paul, John's son, looks at him and says, "I'm just so thankful to have such a supportive father." And John looks at him and says, "Son, I wouldn't be any more proud of you." I couldn't be any less proud of you if you said you were straight. It was like a really like reverse sort of thing about being gay and straight. It was very, very funny and very, very good. Before all the action commences, they really did play up the pride aspect and John being a supportive father. And Marlena calls and he said, "Guys, turn down the music. It's my wife." And they went, "Boo." And he's like, "Oh, guys, come on now. I'll be back to dancing in a minute." It was very funny. Very cute.
Josh, Salem laid Abigail to rest this last week. There was a lot of dynamics. There was the funeral. There was the fact that Nancy went but hid her bracelet, which, of course, Rafe later saw because apparently he's now figured out how to be a smart detective. But I know how much of a fan you and Mike are of Abigail. What did you think of her ending up in a pine box in Boot Hill?
Well, I mean, it's days. So, I mean, they did write it in a way where it does appear that whether she eventually reappears, they've written this as if she is gone, gone, gone. I thought that the way that they did the episode where it was the day of Abigail's funeral was very well done. They didn't actually show us a funeral, but they did show us. The episode opens with Katie McLean's Jennifer Rose Horton reading the obituary as sort of the narrator, and they're going to different spots in Salem where people are getting ready to go to the funeral and they're grieving. I thought it was really well done. It incorporated a whole lot of folks. They showed us Chad going from grieving to rage. There was a whole lot of things that happened in the episode, and I thought it was really, really well done.
The other big news that happened over the holiday was the fact that Eli and Lonnie are exiting, and Ben and Sierra are exiting, which basically the combined departures of those four gave poor Julie nearly a heart attack.
It did.
What did you think of their exits, even though we are seeing Ben and Sierra on Beyond Salem?
That is true. I thought, it's unfortunate that they're all four departing at the same time. But I thought that the scenes where Julie has to say goodbye to her grandson, Eli, and they dance together were so touching and so well done. And I bought into it. Julie and Eli have always had a very special relationship since he came on the show. And I bought into it. I thought it was really, really good. I thought that when Sierra, this is after the funeral, and they come back to Alice Horton's living room. When Doug and Julie are sitting there and Sierra tells them that she and Ben are going to sail away, and Julie kind of has a fit, and 97-year-old Bill Hayes just shoots a look at Julie that says, "Hush up. They're going on an adventure. We go on adventure. We went on adventures all the time. Let them fly free. They'll be fine." It was just, it could have, if it had been spaced out more, I totally get the gripes people might have that these were all rushed and that kind of stuff. And I don't have any idea what goes on behind the scenes to make all that happen. But for what they had, for the time that they had to do it in, the having Bill Hayes and Susan Seaforth Hayes there for Sierra to tell Doug and Julie about them leaving. And it sort of led Doug and Julie to talking about their adventures and talking about how they love each other and how they'll still be there waiting when she comes back and Hope eventually comes back, et cetera, et cetera. For the time space they had to do it in, it was very well done.
The other big plot on Days this last week was Jan and the baby daddy scam. I'm sure you were eating it up.
You know how I love my Jan Spears.
I would have preferred that the baby was actually Sean's.
I know you would have. I know you would have. I'll be honest with you. I don't really understand. I feel like I missed a beat with how this baby is actually Evan's.
It came out of the blue.
Yeah, I didn't really get it, and I feel like I missed something.
They had sex while he came in cleaning. While she was in there to see the doctor for something, they had sex and she got knocked
up. Oh, I did
up.
Miss it. Okay, I did miss that little...
let me tell you.
it was a quick beat.
We couldn't avoid that.
Okay, so Jan Spears going to the docks, which I was happy to see a docks set back, although not the original docks set. And having that baby, and then Sean Douglas comes down to the docks, and Jan throws the baby in the air, except it's not the baby, it's a pile of oranges, because Jan already has the baby on the boat. It was funny, and then she knocks Sean Douglas upside the head, because Sean Douglas is dumb as a brick. And then Belle comes, and they fight, and knocks her in the water. The interesting part to me, all of it played for comedic stuff, and it was pretty good. But the interesting part to me is that when Sean Douglas comes to, Belle is there. She goes in the boat and gets the baby, and Sean says, "Where's Jan?" And Belle's just like, "She's in the water." And Sean Douglas looks at her like, "She's in the water?" And so he jumps in and saves her, or tries to save her, I'm sorry, and she's not there. But that's got to be a bone of contention that Belle was just going to let her die. That's an interesting little blip to me.
Well, considering she was willing to kill her mother, is it any surprise?
No, not a surprise. Not a surprise at all. But I'm interested. Because I wonder if it's going to be, because I do believe this baby's going to continue to be a bone of contention as Belle slithers back into EJ's bed and Sean Douglas has that baby to mess with.
Well, speaking of babies, this last week on General Hospital was the first time I don't like Sasha, but her being on General Hospital's equivalent of QVC, I don't remember what it was called. And basically being, I guess it's not hijacked, but like taken by massive surprise.
Blindsided.
Thank you. I couldn't think of it. Her being blindsided on television with the baby stuff and then watching her with the doll. Ooh, that was rough. I still don't want Sasha. I still want Sasha to be gone, and I want a number of other of those minor characters to be gone. But two things did cross my mind. First of all, Sasha, that was a very heartbreaking scene to watch it, and it wasn't so much heartbreaking because I was watching Sasha. It was heartbreaking because I was watching Maxie and Lucy's reaction to what Sasha was going through. The second thing that I thought of is, it's very interesting that Sasha is now it's not that it ever went away, so I don't want to discount that, but it's very interesting that Sasha is having a resurgence of the baby issues at the same time that Willow is now pregnant. And I wonder if we're going to get some sort of crazy Sasha steals Willow's child at some point. It makes me wonder. What did you think of the Sasha storyline as it played out this week on General Hospital?
So Sophia Mattson as Sasha is of the minor characters, and I agree with you. We've had this conversation multiple times. There were General Hospital's bloated, and a bunch of characters need to be gone. Of all those minor characters, Sasha is my favorite of the minor characters because I think Sophia Mattson is kind of gold, even though she's in a bad role and she's not. It's like she's a minor character, but when they give her stuff to do, she can do it. She played the baby's death months ago really, really well. And I thought she played this really, really well in a way where I felt horrible for her. And I agree with you, Maxie and Lucy watching it, it was horrible. And at the same time, I thought the way that was really well written and paced because it was comedic at first with Morgan Fairchild and the woman from One Life to Live, whose name is escaping me, who played the other person on the QVC-like show. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of playing it up for fun and for silliness. And then it shifted. And I thought it was well done. It was,
It was a very smooth transition.
It really was a smooth transition. And to the Willow component, I agree with you that is a potential thing if they take Sasha in the insane direction and stealing Willow's baby. I'm not convinced that Willow doesn't have a disease.
Well, that, you because can be Willow pregnant, passed, you can be pregnant and have a disease at the same
time.
You can,
but Willow passed out months ago, and they never addressed it. And now she's right. They're saying she's pregnant, but that pass out months ago. I wonder if.
But if I'm not mistaken, maybe, she asked why it was that she passed out months ago because she wasn't pregnant back then. So I don't think that it's completely gone away.
Okay, yeah, it's probably true, and maybe they will do this. I think there's a potential here, and follow me on this, Luke, because I know you may be with me on this. There's a potential here to take Sasha in the direction of Annie on All My Children. There is a potential here to take this character from being boring and monotone to really fun and interesting.
So basically you're saying give her the nutmeg treatment?
Kind of, yeah. I think Sophia Mattson can do it.
Here's the thing. It is a crying shame if we are going to spend that much time trying to salvage a milquetoast character when Maxie is sitting on the sidelines. I am not in the mood when General Hospital is creatively as scatterbrained as it is. I am not in the mood for a transformation of a milquetoast character when Maxie Jones, who is a legacy character, is sitting on the side and just an observer to almost everything that's going on. She's an observer to Nina's storyline. She's an observer to Sasha's storyline. The fact that she's now has this stock, we haven't really seen anything from her as a powerful business owner. It's all been through Sasha and Sasha's mother-in-law. I am not in the mood for General Hospital to be taking us on stories of Sasha and Brando and these other minor characters when major legacy characters are window dressing. I'm just not here for that.
Luke, you're absolutely right. But we have to take what we're being given, and they're clearly not as invested in Maxie and some other legacy characters as they are Sasha, Willow, Cody, Brando. They are invested in those characters, so they're going to stay. And if they're going to stay, I would at least like them to be interesting.
The stupid thing about it is, though, is they're going to forget their own history that they wrote a year and a half ago for Sasha as they try and turn her into Nutmeg.
Like, well, God knows they don't even remember their history from 3 months ago.
Right, that's my point.
I'm with you, I agree.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Carly, because Carly's in a very interesting position. She was told not to buy stock. She bought the stock anyways. The deal went bad. She lost a crap load of money. Someone is now calling in the note on the Metro Court and is going to own it. She won't accept Nina's help. She won't accept Olivia's help. Olivia has told Ned that she won't accept Quartermain help because of the Quartermain connection. She doesn't want to accept.
Except I thought she was an honorary quartermain.
Right. And she doesn't, and she won't accept Ryan Lavery's help. And so like who, first of all, do you suspect who's calling in the note? I don't read spoilers generally, so I'm not asking you to tell me if you know, but is there someone who you suspect owns the note?
I don't know who owns the note. I suspect that Nina is going to end up owning the other half of the Metro Court.
See, but here's the thing that I'm wondering about, and this is just pure speculation. Brad's aunt.
Lou. Lydia Look is her name in real life.
Selena Wu.
Thank you. I feel like Wu may be the person, because I had forgotten about her involvement and her ownership of Deception, and then she shows up. I feel like it would be very interesting, and she might be playing with fire if all of a sudden she's the one who buys the note on the Sunny's ex-wife's hotel.
Oh, she's gold. I would love that.
She's
I want Watrous to be there so I can see her just go in.
Sunny and Wu have had an alliance of sorts. She literally saved his life.
Yep.
I mean, if she now were to own the hotel and not be willing to sell it, that starts making things very interesting. But I don't know why, like, as I say that Wu owning the half would be very interesting, if I was Wu, I would not want to be owning a hotel with a person whose son is a police detective. Because that would, like, if Olivia's not happy with you, she'll be like, son, help me out.
No, that is true. That is, I agree with you. However, it would be the way to get back at Carly for the spectacle Carly made out of all of it when Sunny was supposedly dead, when she walked in and tried to take over the quote-unquote five families. It would be a way for Selena. So we don't quite know yet just how petty Selena is. I'm hoping that she is 10 on the petty scale and completely takes it over. I think it would be kind of funny if she took it over and then put Brad in charge of it. And made Brad work with Olivia.
That would be interesting. Okay, so here comes another part of General Hospital and why General Hospital has, for me, has more elements of potential goodness than B&B and Y&R. But I'm getting, I need the writers, Dan and Chris and Dan, to finally give us a hint of what the fuck is going on with Victor and Valentine, because I'm on the verge of not caring. I am tired of these two scenes of them with their heads together and us not really moving plot. This has been drug out too long. This impending doom, this thing that the Cassadines are supposed to come together, we've been hearing about that for the better part of a year, and yet we still don't know much.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm with you. I'm like right on the jumping off the ledge of I don't care. Because at this point, I'm just tired of Victor talking to Valentine and it just feels like there's a lot. This is a very you thing to say, Luke. There's a lot of talk and no do, which I'm usually down for because I'm a P&G boy. But even P&G would do after they talked after a while. I just don't really understand where we're going. I know part of this is because Charles Shaughnessy was ill and he was out for several months, which is why this is drug on even longer than it normally would have. But I still, the problem is we don't have any clue where it's going.
Right.
And you have to let the audience in on something.
If they had it while he was gone, that Valentine either uncovered it himself, or because I don't know that Valentine has known. When I think about the scenes that I've watched, I'm like, first of all, because it's been a while since we've seen Victor, I remember Victor having Valentine kidnapped, and then I remember Valentine ending up on the island and all of that. But I'm like, has there actually been a conversation between those two about the plot that even though we don't know it, Valentine does? Or has it just all been this whispering shit?
It's all been the whispering shit. I mean, we get the side stuff like Victor was upset that Valentine didn't neutralize Laura. And so he's going to turn his focus to Anna.
I don't get why Laura as the mayor, like, A, Port Charles is not that big of a town. B, the mayors of Port Charles on soaps are often impotent. And Laura's interest in using her leverage to help thwart Victor is only, it's not like she's a super spy like Anna and has the resources of a spy agency behind her. She's a mayor of a town who can technically order some police force around and maybe, if she's lucky, call in some favors with state and local governments.
And she has no interest in running the town to begin with.
Well, but like, here's
zero interest.
Listen, you and Jillian have complained about her not doing anything for a mayor. If Victor can sit in a chair on The Young and the Restless and just spout drivel all the time and be considered running a massive corporation conglomerate, then Laura can sit at a coffee table and have an assistant and occasionally talk about the stuff that's going on.
But Port Charles isn't scared of Laura like all of Newman is scared of Victor.
I was about to say, those two are not equal.
I feel like in terms of the size of government and or corporate organization, they really don't differ.
They should have recalled Laura in that episode.
See, and I'm like, I don't get why they did the recall. General Hospital for me is still the soap that I always watch first because it has the characters I care about the most. But it's so frustrating.
It is very frustrating.
So frustrating.
And they still have the problem. One of the larger problems to me with this show is they have, because they don't mind their history, they don't realize or they just decide not to utilize the secrets that still haven't been uncovered. No one still knows that Spencer rigged that election, like that actually got Laura elected.
Do you think that the writers are going to actually
go back
to that?
No, I don't. That's my problem. There are secrets that they're not uncovering, which could make this more interesting. General Hospital, I know it's the first that you watch. It's the last that I watch because I am so frustrated with General Hospital because it is the show that has, I would say, probably, I mean, like, some of the best actors in daytime. I think Chris and Dan and Chris are solid writers. I don't pretend to know what's going on in the behind the scenes or not. But something's not right because the stories, they drop stories. They pick them up. When they pick them up, they've forgotten half the details. We have had Austin on our screen for a year, and they have not mentioned the fact that he is Jimmy Lee Holt's son since the day he came on.
Speaking of which, dropping details, having no clue what's going on. Did you get whiplash over Elizabeth this last week?
Oh my God. Oh, my poor Lizzie Beth.
Like,
what's happening there? Because in the one episode.
That is a good question.
In the one episode I watched at General Hospital, and it was episode 15,000. I said, I hit Josh up. I was like, Josh, what's wrong with Elizabeth? My ass over here. I'm like, dude, she got DID? What happened, Josh?
So you watched that 15,000th episode, Mel.
I did.
Since then, a few episodes later, Thursday or Friday's episode this last week.
She checked herself out.
Well, when you messaged me, I said, mm-hmm. I looked originally like she had DID, and then it looked like she didn't have DID, and now I'm going back to the fact that she does have DID. Thursday and Friday's episode, I don't know how they directed or how Rebecca Herbst decided to act it, but she acted on Thursday and Friday very much like there is a personality split, and they had Kevin. She exploded on Kevin and she knocked this puzzle over and she got this really cold, distant look. And Kevin said, we need something about needing to talk to the parents and there's some trauma from your childhood that you've forgotten. And she kind of got cold and cocked her head and said, what would that be? And he said, that's in your brain, Elizabeth. And it was very, like, I thought, wait a minute, we're throwing spaghetti against a wall here, aren't we? We've turned this story 14 different times. Because that, to me, now I'm convinced she has DID.
Well, that's what it seemed like. In the one episode I saw, I was like, when did she get DID? She got too many kids to have DID. I don't understand what's happening. So,
I don't
Luke, what do you think?
I think it gives Rebecca Herbst a storyline.
Yep.
And Rebecca Herbst needs a storyline.
I absolutely agree with that, you.
That is the most positive that I can say about it. And the lens through which I will celebrate it. Because Rebecca Herbst deserves a storyline.
And Rebecca Herbst can turn shit into shook. She can turn shit into shook. She's that good.
Yes, she can. But it doesn't make sense.
Not a lick. Not a lick of sense.
There's a... Days of Our Lives very rarely, like within its own sort of mythology, it makes sense, but it stretches the lines of credulity more often than not. General Hospital has that some of that too, but the problem with General Hospital is that General Hospital never pushes it as far as devil possession, or like we haven't had that kind of stuff on General Hospital in a very long time. Not to say that it hasn't been done, because yes, we've had vampires and all the other stuff go to Port Charles and blah, 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 blah. What I'm saying is General Hospital tends to be depicted a little bit more realistically than Salem.
Oh, yeah.
And within that context, this stuff doesn't make sense.
And the reason it works on Days, if you're a Days watcher, is that as out of the loop and insane as Days of Our Lives can be, if you're a Days watcher, you know, and particularly under Ron's regime, even as crazy as it is, they don't leave details out. So you're like, that story's insane, but it, as you just said, in Days history, it makes sense. It follows. This stuff isn't following on General Hospital, and I think that's my problem. They miss details, and that's what's bugging me.
Well, final thought, Mel?
My final thought is... Ridge went back to Brooke, the Bold and the Beautiful, for the billionth time. I guess we're doing that again.
Josh, final thought?
My final thought is also from Bold and the Beautiful. I don't know when this will be put out, but on Monday's episode of this week, Taylor...
We are already at the end of Monday, so it will not be put out still today.
Okay. Taylor and Deacon had scenes today may not be for the first time, but it was the first elongated scene. Like it was one of those, they had their scene stretch over the entire episode. Sean Kanan and Krista Allen have mad chemistry. What? Mad chemistry. It was so good. I wanted to keep watching them talk. It was, and I thought, how delicious would this be if they put Taylor and Deacon together?
Oh, it was Speedy might come for so you good. On Twitter.
Come on after, because it was deliciously good. And I need Ridge gone. Ridge needs to be out of everybody's orbit. It's terrible.
My final thought is fix it, General Hospital, because it's going to be a long summer if this keeps up. And you only shoot, what, 4 weeks ahead? There's still time. By middle of August, we could fix it. Fix it. Just fix it. On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Mel is at Melody Eagles, and Josh is at Dr. Joshua. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye, y'all.